Follow me down this deep, dark hole.
And welcome to New Horror Express, your fortnightly podcast chatting to the best indie talent the horror genre has to offer. I'm your host, Scott Murphy, and on this episode, I'm chatting with actor David H. Thornton, aka Art the Clown, a character who in short order has established himself into the canon of iconic slasher killers, which is just one of the things I chat to David about. We also talk about how he came to replace Mike Gianelli in the role, David's personal love of slashers, and his experience at horror cons. He also tells us some pretty fun stories from the set of Terrifier. But before I let you get to that, I just want to remind you, if you are a fan of the show, the best way to support us is for you to rate, review, and subscribe to us on iTunes and Stitcher. Also, you can now check us out on the Radio Public app, which is totally free for you, but pays us per listen so we can continue to grow the podcast and keep production high. But now, on to the interview with Dave. Hi, David. Welcome to New Horror Express.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
It's good to have you on the show.
Thank you.
We're here to talk to you all about your role as Art the Clown in Terrifier. It's we're also, you know, talk about your career and all good stuff, all the stuff as well. But we're going to start off with Art the Clown. And first, I just want to know, where did you hear about the role and were you aware of the character before kind of seeing the role come up, you know, from the All Hallows Eve film that kind of smooshed together like the shorts that the Art the Clown character turned out?
Yes, actually I was aware of Art the Clown before I auditioned. I had seen All Hallows Eve like a year or so before, because I just love like anything dealing with like clowns or anything like that anyways, like scary clowns. So I was like, oh, that looks like a cool idea. And I saw the film All Hallows Eve and I was like, oh, I like this guy. He's like a evil Mr. Bean. What a fun character to play. I was like, I would love to play a character like that one day. And I was like, about a year later when I was like in between jobs, I had just come back from doing a tour and I decided to just take a few months off just to audition for stuff. So I was auditioning for like a lot of Broadway tours at the time, and I kept on getting into final callbacks but not like actually making the show. I was like, dang it. And then I came across the audition for Terrifier. I was like, oh my God, this is the same character as All Hallows Eve. Yes, 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 yes. Because they were looking for like a tall, skinny guy that had like clowning or physical comedy experience to play him. So I'm like, that is totally me. I can totally do this. I can knock this out of the park. So I contacted my reps and had them submit me, and the rest is history.
And how was the, what was the audition process like?
What was... That was weird. Yeah. Yeah. Because I went in there, like, every time I audition for stuff, they give me scripts usually. Or there's a script at least in the room for me to read over before I go in and, you know, audition. And this time there wasn't. And I was like, I look around the room and all these other people that were auditioning, they all had scripts. And I'm like, oh no. Oh no. Here I am going in for a big, huge film role and I don't have a script. I'm just like panicking. I go in the room, I'm like, so I hate to say this, but no one gave me a script. And they're like, oh yeah, you don't need one because Art never talks. I'm like, oh, I know. I just wondered if you needed something, you know. They're like, oh yeah, well, we just want you to like create a scene off the top of your head where you decapitate a guy. I'm like, oh, okay, cool. Can I have a, you know, a few minutes to go think about this? They're like, no, just go ahead and do it right now. And I'm like, okay, cool. And that's why I'm glad I have, like, you know, some, like, improv training, because I had to, like, just totally just make up this scene where I decapitated a guy right off the top of my head. And I made up this weird cartoonish walk that I came in, like, snuck up behind the guy and knocked him out, sawed off his head, tasted the blood, didn't like the taste of it, so I took out, like, a salt shaker and seasoned it, then liked it, and then just skipped out on my merry way. And that's what got me the part.
That sounds like a pretty incredible little act. I can see why you got the part. That sounds great.
Yeah, it just made me question what's going on in my head. That's what I came up with.
Yeah, well, it must have been fascinating that was the only direction you got. There was no other further thing. Just decapitate a guy.
Yeah, as you do.
Just another day.
Yeah. So, you know, it's like, thank God I had all those years of, you know, improv experience, or I would have just been like, okay. Sometimes you just have to go that extra mile.
I was going to ask that because, you know, I've watched a lot of horror movies when there's been a lot of killer clown horror movies. Mm-hmm. But I noticed that while watching the film Terrifier was that it seemed immediately apparent that you'd had some sort of clowning or physical comedy experience.
Yes.
Maybe done dark clown or improv or something like that, because it wasn't just like your typical kind of guy playing a scary clown.
Yeah. I mean, that's like something I wanted to actually add to Art, because, you know, he is a clown, so he's got to have that kind of like that sort of mannerism about him. But I also want to make it a little bit creepier, so it seemed a little bit inhuman in a way too. And I guess you could say I have clowning experience, because I grew up, first of all, I started watching like the original, like, great physical comedians like Buster Keaton, Charlie Chaplin, even like Rowan Atkinson, Marx Brothers, even Doug Jones, Jim Carrey, all those guys as a child. I loved watching those performances. And I found it captivating, because you don't see that type of acting anymore. That was more like the vaudeville type of era. Yeah. And I loved it. I thought it was so cartoonish in some ways. And I just loved it. I loved that kind of visual humor. And so I started trying to adapt that into my own style as a kid when I started doing like community theater. And I did a lot of children's theater, where children are more into the physical comedy versus the verbal comedy. And so that I kind of like honed those like skills over all those years of doing community theater and children's theater, even like touring with the Grinch. And like when I toured with the national tour of the Grinch for 5 years, I had the honor and privilege of being the understudy for possibly one of the greatest physical comedians of our time, who was Stephen Carl, who you might know as Robbie Rotten from the show Lazy Town. He unfortunately passed away last year from cancer. But
yeah, I heard about that.
Yeah, Stefan was an amazing physical actor. Yeah, I believe he even has he had training in clowning in mind and all that. So when I was his understudy, he was able to like help fine tune all those skills that I had been developing over all those years, and like, you know, tutor me in that way to like improve upon what I had already been doing. So it's, and I took a lot of that and just put that into Art.
The other thing I was going to ask, I've read that you have done a lot of voiceover work, stuff like that. How challenging was it that there, you did not use your voice in this film at all?
That definitely was challenging, because that my voice has always been my greatest skill set. Like, that's like that one toolbox I always use. Every role I've ever played, I like to use a totally different voice. Mm. I hate using my own voice on stage or anything like that. I like to use some kind of character voice, because it helps me become the character more. And that was all taken away from me in this film. I was like, oh no.
So is that generally your way into character? Because like you hear different actors talking about different ways to get into character. For some, it's like a walk, or, you know, a certain mannerism. And so that's generally your way, the voice, getting the right voice.
Yeah, that's part of my process. I will sit there and I will like sometimes obsess for hours over what voice I'm going to use for a character. And like once I find the voice, that's when I really start finding the character as well, because that helps me dictate how the character speaks. And usually that, you know, how that character speaks also influences how the character stands, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. All that's all interconnected in my head. So it's like now with art, I didn't have that voice there. So like, okay, so I'm going to have to find other ways to discover this character. And I was like, okay, so he doesn't have a voice. Well, how else will he convey meaning? And it's like, okay, he would be conveying meaning more through like his gestures and his facial expression. So I decided like those would be bigger for him because that's how he conveys meaning to people. So it would be a little bit more exaggerated, which works perfectly well with clowning. So they all, you know, kind of go hand in hand with each other.
Was it also difficult working under all that kind of prosthetics and especially those kind of big fake teeth that you have, those gargling teeth?
Oh yeah. Oh, those teeth, those things made me drool like crazy. I had to get used to those, but yeah, that's a good thing I didn't have to talk, because you know when I would talk with those things in my mouth, I sound like some like deranged redneck. I'm just just kind of like talking like that the whole time. the makeup itself, I believe Damien used a gelatin based prosthetic, and it was a whole entire mask that was glued to my face, so every inch of my face is glued, so that mask would allow for a full range of expression, which was great. I loved that. It was basically like a second skin. And I would even forget I was wearing it at times. And so the makeup I was able to do a lot with, which I appreciated. Because I'm one of these people, like when I do different roles and I get a really interesting makeup job, I like to sit in front of the mirror for a while and just make faces and see what all I can do with what I'm given with the makeup. And this was one of those like characters where I was able to do a lot with it. It's very good. And it's essential for the character too, because he's got to have an expressive face. Yeah. It's not like he's wearing a hockey mask.
That is very true. Yeah. I think one of the, how long was that process? The prosthetics process, how long did you have to do that each day? Was that like a long thing?
It started out about 4 hours, but we've gotten it now down to about 2.5 to 3 hours. Sometimes it would take longer because Damien would also like, not only was he directing the film, but he was doing my makeup. So Damien would do my makeup for a little bit, then he would have to go direct a scene or set up a shot and come back and do some more makeup. So there were a few days where I was in that chair for about 6 to 8 hours.
Oh, so the director, Damien Leon, did the prosthetics himself?
Yeah, he wrote it, directed it, did all the practical effects. He did all that.
I was aware that he wrote and directed it, but I wasn't. I did not realize that.
He's that talented. He's that talented. You don't see that a lot with directors now.
No, I mean, like, certainly not that. You know, certainly not like doing their own practical effects. Or I mean, you hear about directors who maybe write, direct, and edit or something like that, but. Yeah, doing your own practical effects is something else.
Yeah, he. I don't know how he did it. He did all those practical effects himself. He had no one else doing them for him. He did that all himself. And so, I mean, I don't know how he slept because, you know, he would, when he wasn't filming or on set, he was off set, like, working on different practical effects and stuff like that. So I'm just like, God, geez, man. he totally committed to it.
Yeah. Given this was obviously an independent film, you know, and the director's doing a whole bunch of things, was it a long shoot or was it, how long was the...
Yeah, it started off, it was supposed to be, you know, IRL, a normal, you know, typical shoot, like 30-day type shoot. Mm-hmm. But we had some setbacks because we were a very low-budget film with, you know, had some money issues where we had to raise more money and find new locations because of some other setbacks. And so what became basically was supposed to be like a, you know, month long shoot or so ended up being like about a year and a half off and on shooting, because we also came back and added some extra scenes and stuff like that too. So occasionally I would get like a phone call from David's like, hey, we want to do this. Can you come back in? I'm like, yeah, sure. I think I rapped on the film 4 different times.
So when did the process start? Was this like 2015?
Yeah, 2015. I auditioned for, I think, April of 2015. And we started filming in like, I think, late September, early October of 2015. And we didn't totally finish everything until like about March or April of 2017. I think that's when we filmed our last scene.
So you didn't have the voice to get into the character.
Correct.
And it's not the kind of character, like, you know, obviously Art is like a weird, evil character. It's not like getting into character as a doctor or a soldier or something like that. So what, how do you get into character? How do you get into that headspace of being, I am Art the Clown?
I really don't know how to tell you how I do it, because I can turn it on and turn it off in a heartbeat. I think just being in the costume and the makeup alone helps me do it. It's just something I can innately do. I don't know. I don't really have a process as much as, you know, like I don't go like full Daniel Day-Lewis or anything like that. So it's like, as soon as they would say cut, I was back to my normal self. So I wasn't one of those people in character the whole entire time I was on set.
All right. Okay. Okay. Yeah. So you're not like one of those. Yeah. Don't do that Daniel Day-Lewis thing where it's, you know, you're in character all the time and you bring it home and, you know, like.
Yeah. I wasn't like doing the Jared Leto stuff either, like just mailing like condoms to people. It's like, no, I can be myself and become the character when I need to become the character. It's just not a problem for me. But, you know, each actor has their own thing. That's just my thing. I can easily turn it on, turn it off. Well, it's like once I know who the character is in my head, they're already living there. They're already taking up that headspace, so I can always bring them out when I need to.
So you didn't need to be... I've heard of other actors, particularly in horror movies, where they're playing the antagonist, the villain, being kind of separate from the cast, keeping separate a bit of distance between the cast who are playing the kind of the victims or the heroes or whatever it may be. But that was not an issue. You with your female co-stars.
Oh, we were always joking around. As soon as like the camera stopped rolling, we're just joking around on set. There was no separation between us, especially since we were in such tight spaces and stuff like that. We didn't have the luxury of having trailers or anything like that. Yeah. So we were always all together. So there was none of that. I mean, I have no problem if there's an actor that needs that from me and just needs to have that separate space from me. I can give them that. So whatever they need to make it work for themselves, that's fine. But like personally, I'm just not like that. I'd rather be able to build a relationship with my co-stars and have fun with them on and off set. Because I think, you know, having a good relationship with your castmates offset, it translates well on screen as well, because you know how to work with each other.
Yeah. And so it sounds like there was a very fun atmosphere on set. You know, it's a nasty, brutal film, but it's also quite a funny film at times as well.
Yeah. It's exactly.
Quite a buoyant atmosphere during the filming.
Oh yeah, it's just like, especially I like to, I'm always one of these type of people, I like to bring balance to things. So like when we have so much just awful violence going on, it's nice to have some levity there too, just to keep things, you know, so we're all not just going insane. Especially not just like with the content of the movies, like some of the other, you know, personal stuff we were dealing with, you know, money and stuff like that. So that, you know, it was good to have, you know, those moments just to be funny and have fun with what we were doing. Yeah. It was like, I remember like my first night working with Samantha, who plays Victoria, was my first night working with her was the first night I was wearing like the what I call the Buffalo Bill suit, where I'm wearing the boobs and the
right, yeah,
all that. So I was like, hey, I'm David and these are my boobs. You know, it's like, yeah, welcome to the set, I'm naked. And she was totally cool with it. She's like, this is hysterical. We were just making like funny videos about me wearing boobs and stuff like that on set. So she's like, it was great. I was like, yeah, we're gonna work together just fine.
Yeah. Sometimes you watch a film and you wonder how deliberate or not deliberate, you know, references are.
Yeah.
So it's quite fun. You're specifically calling it the Buffalo Bill scene. Because, you know, like,
oh, yeah.
Like, oh, yeah, yeah, Silence of the Lambs.
Oh yeah, that's what I was totally thinking the whole entire time. I was even joking around that while I was dressed like that. It's like, will you fuck me? I'd fuck me. I was having fun with it. And I was like, yeah, I know, because we put so many nods to so many different horror films in this as well. Just sometimes some were intentional, some were like, oh, we realized later on, it's like, oh wow, that totally works as a nod to this film or this film. That's great. I look at this film as like a love letter to horror films, especially slasher films.
Yeah, it seems like the type of movie that generally is not so much made now. Yeah. This is very much built in that classic slasher mold. And there's not, in terms of like 21st century horror, there's not a whole lot of that. I mean, there's the Hatchet trilogy, but outside of that, there's not that kind of classic slasher thing, and it does seem to be very much honed in on that.
Yeah, it's exactly. That's what we're going for. We want to just get back to where things used to be, and I'm like, and not just like mainstream horror. We were going like for full on like grindhouse B movie schlock from back in the day. They were just having fun with it, and I think that's what's been missing a lot from like horror films, especially slashers. Is they've forgotten how to have fun with the genre recently and try new things and try, push boundaries and take risks. They're playing it too safe recently. We didn't want to do that. We wanted to get back to basics. I think that's been embraced by the horror community itself. And not just like hard, like the fans, but like even the people that have made horror films before. I've met some of these actors since I'm doing conventions now. I've met like Kane Hodder and like Ari Lehman and all these guys, and they love what we've done. They're like, thank you, thank you, thank you for bringing back slashers.
So it seems like, it's not just an acting job for you. It's it seems like you are very much an enthusiastic horror fan yourself.
Oh yes, I love them. I think they're just it's fun escapism. I think it's always an adrenaline rush watching those type of films.
So how did you get into, what was your kind of film that got you into horror? What kind of captured your attention?
Well, I was kind of late to the game because growing up, my mom was terrified of horror films. I mean, she thought the original Fall of the House of Usher was the scariest movie she'd ever seen in her life. And so she would not allow horror films in our house. She just absolutely hated them. I know my dad would like sometimes sneak down and like watch them late at night on TV when mom was asleep or she was away. But I'm like, I didn't really start watching horror films until Scream 2 came out. It was when I was a senior in high school. And then my castmates wanted to go see Scream 2. And they're like, Dave, come out. I'm like, oh. But there was like this girl I had a crush on in the cast. And I was like, okay, I can't be a total chicken and just not go to this. Like, okay, I'm going to go. And I was like, this is so much fun. And after that, I was like, Mom, you're crazy. These are fun. And that next year, especially when I was in college, when I was out of the house, my roommate, who was also came from a very like, he came from a very sheltered background. I would say he was raised a Southern Baptist, and like his family is like, your typical just like Leave It to Beaver type of gee willikers type family. They're just all so right, okay. They're just honest, just good people. Just like, so he had not experienced a lot. I mean, he had never seen a boob before. He didn't know what a boob looked like. That's how sheltered he was. And so we're like, we're away from home. Like, hey, the movie gallery's right down the street. Why don't we just go get a whole stack of like horror films and like watch these? And that's what we did. And that's what we would start doing like every weekend. We'd just get stacks of horror films and just watch them all, like all the Jason movies, Freddy movies, Mike Myers, all that kind of stuff. We'd just binge watch them, just trying to make up for all that lost time. And it was so much fun. So much fun.
So what would some of your favorites be now, would you say? Is it slashers that you're most enthusiastic about, would you say, still? Or
yeah, I'm more... I like more of the slashers. I enjoy a good like psychological thriller at times, but I really enjoy slashers. I'm saying like my top five would be in no particular order: Texas Chainsaw Massacre, the original one, Nightmare on Elm Street 3, Halloween, Exorcist, and The Omen.
They are all fine choices.
Oh yeah, and they're all great in their own regard too.
It's weird to think that Nightmare on Elm Street 3 is directed by the same person who brought you The Mask. But
yeah. I never realized that, but you're right. Wow. Oh, that's great.
It's just one of those strange things.
Wow. Because I love both those movies.
Yeah. I would say that's an all-time great sequel.
Oh, God.
In terms of my favorite horror sequels, I think that is definitely up there.
Oh, we just nailed it. It just did everything right. It was so good. So good. Especially since it basically disregarded Nightmare on Elm Street 2. It was just like, oh, yeah, that never happened. Freddy takes over a guy's body. That never happened.
Yeah, no. It was like, yeah, that was a weird film.
Yeah. I mean, they were trying something new and it didn't work. So it was like, okay, let's go back to what, you know, it works better with him being in the dream world.
It does work better with him being in the dream world. Although, as a kind of watch for like unintentional comedy, because of all the kind of unintentional homoeroticism in that movie, it is very funny.
Yeah. But yeah, I think Freddy works so much better in the dreamscape, and because it makes him such a much more terrifying creature. Because, you know, for one, you know, you have to sleep; you will die if you do not sleep. And two, it just lends itself to so much more creative kills. There are infinite possibilities you can do with the dream landscape. So it's just like, oh, I love it. Such a great character. Such a great character.
It is amazing. To go back to the... I'm sure we could talk about great slasher movies all night. Yeah. But to go back to Terrifying, okay, it does do some things that has a kind of twist on that classic slasher formula. Because there's, for example, there is a scene in it, which in my head I think of as the Indiana Jones scene, where Jenna's character, Tara, who is kind of set up to be the final girl, is in a battle with Art, but kind of too early on in the film for it to be the final battle. And you think, what's going to happen here? And he just pulls out a gun and shoots her.
Yep.
Which is like, oh, okay, that's a surprise. Yeah. And also some of the things, particularly the ending as well, it's not a kind of classic slasher ending. It's not like, oh, he's been defeated, but look where his hand is back, you know, so it could be a sequel. It's like much darker than that. So were those very conscious, like, did you talk to Damien about this? Were these very conscious choices of being like, we want to make a classic slasher, but we're going to give it a different flavor, a little bit different flavor.
Yeah, and that's exactly what we were doing there, because it was like, you know, we wanted to modernize a few things, put our own little stamp on the genre. And I think that we did. I'm like, we're not the first people to use a gun in a slasher, though. It was like, you know, of course, you know, Scream 2 is a great example of that. I believe Maniac used a gun, if I remember right. It's just like, it's especially here in the U.S., unfortunately, it's a very real fear now in our culture with, you know, gun violence. So it's like, oh, that's very relevant for right now, too. But I'm like, it's not like he uses a gun as his main tool for killing. Mm-hmm. He doesn't just go around shooting people. This was more of a defensive mechanism to get. This was his contingency plan if everything went wrong. And then when he does use it, he doesn't just shoot. He uses it as a slasher would and destroys someone with it. You know, he just repeatedly just fires into her face and just disfigures her. So she can't have, like, you know, an open casket funeral by far, you know?
Yeah.
And so I think that's what's kind of cool about it. And it's like, you know, I always like to point out to people, he didn't really, as opposed to all the other kills, he's not having fun killing her with a gun. You can see that on his face. He's kind of disappointed that he had to do that. It's like she's taking the fun out of it for him.
Yeah, he looks kind of pissed off about it.
Yeah.
I think what makes it kind of more surprising, like, you know, with the Scream films, you kind of know that the killer is a person. Like, just a normal person. And same with Maniac. That's a very kind of grimy, grounded kind of character. But, you know, obviously it gets weird in the end. But, you know, those characters are very human, whereas obviously there's supernatural air to Art.
Yeah.
Made it more surprising, I think.
Yeah. Oh yeah, there's definitely something supernatural going on with them. You can tell that by the end of the film.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, Art was pissed off with that kill. In terms of the many gory kills in the movie, mm-hmm. did you have a personal favorite?
Yeah, I mean, I would say, like, most people would say it would be the infamous hacksaw scene. I'm like, yeah. That's a fun one. That's like probably the most notable one. But like my personal favorite one was more of an Easter egg. That's why I like it. Is the decapitation scene with the exterminator, because the guy that was playing the exterminator, his real name is Mike Levy. His film company, Fuzz and the Lens Films. The other two guys from that company are the two cops that come in at the end. But they are the guys that started the whole like scary clown craze here in the United States a few years ago with the Staten Island Clown. He was the guy that would just stand outside in a clown costume freaking people out. So that's what was kind of cool. It's like I decapitate, you know, the Staten Island Clown. Plus, it's a really cool scene. That's a really on decapitation. I was like, it's like the amount of blood we're using for that scene, because we're doing it the old-fashioned way with different prosthetics, different builds for his neck, and then we had the actual head that I only had one go at to actually tear off the head. But when we had the pipes going through it, you know, where we had the pumps spurting out the blood and everything like that, so it was really fun doing that scene, because it was getting back to basics in that regard. We didn't do any CG with that. That was all practical effects. Yeah. And it looks really good. It's just like, it looks so good.
The practical effects look really good. The blood effects look really quite nasty. Did they look faker on set? It looks really good on screen, but or was it just as nasty? Did it look just as nasty?
It looked just as nasty on set. It's like, especially like the blood that we're using, like whatever Damien used for this stuff was amazing, because it wasn't just like that bright red blood you're used to seeing. It had this, like, I think he put some chocolate syrup and some soap into it as well. So it, like, when it would dry, it would give that more of a rusty color that, you know, blood actually has when it dries, which I didn't realize until like one of the first nights where I looked at my costume, like when it had dried, I'm like, oh wow, this really looks like old blood now. This is really cool. I loved it. I thought it was cool.
I can imagine it'd be really, really fun. Did you go through a lot of those, like the clown costumes, like getting covered in blood all the time?
We only had two, so we had to keep on washing them, because we didn't film in like full continuity, like in order. So we had to go back and forth. So like that was a big pain. It was like trying to get the blood splatters the same.
Oh, like watching back like rushes and being like, oh, we need to get this.
Yeah, I'm like, okay, where are those little specks on my face here? You know, because as you see, in the course of the film, he gets bloodier and bloodier and bloodier. So it's like, oh geez, where were these splatters?
Are you paranoid about like those like movie mistake videos where they're like, this scene, you know, and then like two minutes later he's got like less blood on him.
Well, that was an ongoing joke between Damien and I on set. I was like, excuse me, but I noticed in scene 42 that he was wearing he had a splatter of blood on his right cheek, but in scene 43 that splatter is gone, but then it's back in scene. I was doing this kind of stuff all the time, which is like, we're joking about the continuity all the time. We're like, oh, people are going to rake us over the coals for this one day.
going back a little bit, you mentioned we're going to talk a little bit about the infamous kill, the hacksaw, cutting Catherine Cochran's character in half. You mentioned earlier that it was a really good atmosphere on set. And yeah. I imagine that was really good, because I imagine she had to be really comfortable with you to be vulnerable in that scene.
Yes. I mean, that was like the one night I would say we did not do any real joking on set, because that was a very dangerous stunt that we were doing there, because that was not something that you could just go out and buy. That's a rig we had to build. And they tested out on our DP, George. It was like, if he can hang upside down on this thing, then Catherine definitely can. And And it was staying because, like, that's multiple hours that she was having to do that for. And, you know, just we would only let her hang upside down for 30 seconds at a time because it's very dangerous for the human body to hang upside down because all the blood rushing to the head. And she still even got sick afterwards. But I think she had some inner ear problems for a few days because of that. She, I think she almost ruptured the eardrum. But it was also 20 degrees that night, and I was cold. I know she was definitely cold, but she, I mean, she totally committed to it. I'm like, she totally sold that. Didn't complain at all, nothing. I was like, she was in such a compromising position like that, too.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's like, I consider Catherine to be the MVP of our film. It's just like, that scene would not have worked if she had not done what she had done with it. And that's why she fully committed to it, because she knew, she flat out said, yeah, I know exactly what, this is going to be the scene everybody talks about.
Yeah, it absolutely is. It's a standout sequence, and I think you know, I've seen it on some lists of, like, you know, goriest kills of recent years, and you know, like, it is one that has definitely got people in the horror community talking.
Yeah, and it's like the only thing is, like, oh god, how are we going to surpass that in the sequels? It's like, oh, did we set the bar too high?
Well, actually, is there anything? I mean, obviously, it was announced that there will be a Terrifier 2. Art will be back.
Oh, yes.
Is definitely. Is there any dates in terms of, you know, when it's going to start shooting or when the release or anything like that? Or any details you can tell us at all?
Well, I'll say that date-wise, right now we have the script finished. So right now we're looking for, you know, funding right now. Mm-hmm. So once we have funding, we can start pre-production and hopefully start filming this fall. So I like to say I have 2020 vision. I hope to get it out next year, but we'll see. But as for, like, the film itself, I can't say too much, of course, but I would say that, you know, the first film is we set to establish art. Now we can branch out and, like, flesh out the world around him and how he affects that world. So that's what we want to do in this next one, is go a little bit bigger with that. And, like, you know, we don't want to totally explain who Art is yet, but we want to show how he impacts the world around him. And we might start digging into more, like, why he's doing what he's doing, like what forces are controlling him, or what, if anything, is controlling him.
Yeah, because in Terrifier, he doesn't really get any, you know, he comes fully, he's a character, he comes fully formed. There is no, like, backstory, no prologue to the character.
Yeah, that's something we did on purpose. We wanted people, the audience, to kind of experience how it was for the victims in that film, because we filmed that basically almost like real time. Everything happens in real time. And so, you know, you look at this, like, in a real-world setting, like, that's something that could happen. Some guy just out of nowhere could come out and just cause mayhem. And, of course, the people that are involved in it wouldn't have no idea who this guy was beforehand. So it's like, that's how we want the audience to film. They just, like, who is this guy? Why is he doing this? And it's like, and that's why we left it like that. It's like, yeah, we don't want to explain him yet. A little bit of mystery is fun, I think.
Absolutely. And there's some interesting kind of threads left there, because, I mean, not just with Art, but obviously in the film, Samantha's character, Victoria, almost becomes like a villain herself.
Exactly.
So, you know, I'd be interested to see if she returned in some.
Yeah, she regard. Might. She might one day. there's always a possibility for that, because, like, yeah, it's like, you don't, she's definitely not dead, so, you know, there's always opportunities to, like, bring certain characters back if we need to.
Would you like to, I mean, I know you're just concentrating on the film that's coming up, but as a fan of slasher films, would you like to see this become a kind of franchise character?
Oh, of course. Yes. I mean, I'm thinking it's needed right now, because it's like we haven't had any big new icons for the genre in almost like 30 years, really. It's like, well, I mean, we've had maybe like Ghostface, But, you know, that's a different character every single time. And
yeah, that is a different character.
We've had Jigsaw, but I mean, he's not really a slasher per se. He's basically just, you know, he's a puppet master, I guess you could say. But it's like, but we haven't had someone like Jason or Freddy or like that kind of force that's stalking people. That has been really a standout, except for like maybe Victor Crowley, as you say. And I think it's needed because, like, you know, I look at it this way, like Freddy, Jason, Mike Myers, Chucky, all those were the guys that took the mantle from the original horror films, like Wolfman, Dracula, Frankenstein, Creature from Black Lagoon. So it's like that's the genre needs to keep going forward, and, you know, it's building new characters and keep evolving. And I think we're starting to rely too much on reboots right now instead of creating new stories and new characters. And I hope, you know, art is the start of a new generation of horror.
I think it's an interesting thing. And I think, yeah, there's not been that kind of slasher icon for a while that is comparable to a Freddy, a Jason, a Leatherface, a Chucky. And when I was thinking about, like, kind of comparable characters from the 21st century horror, yeah, I thought of Jigsaw, but like you say, he's not really a slasher kind of killer.
Yeah.
There's Mick Taylor from the Wolf Creek films, but again, it's not kind of a traditional slasher figure. The only one I could really think of that was comparable was Victor Crowley.
I mean, other people have tried, but it's just that it's usually just some guy wearing a mask that just, you know, will cock their head from to the side from occasion or do something like that. But it's like there's nothing, they're lacking that presence, that charisma that, you know, Freddy and Jason, all those guys had.
And I think that's an interesting kind of market. There's a kind of interesting area to kind of hit on. Because, like you say, I think horror has become very stratified in terms of you've got, like, the big kind of reboots and franchises and remakes, and then you've got, like, the kind of independent stuff that is doing, like, very weird original stories that are kind of self-contained. The things like Get Out and Hereditary and The Witch and stuff like that, and which is more towards the kind of arty side, I suppose. And then there is this bit in the middle that doesn't have a lot of attention at the moment, and you're kind of filling that gap. And I can, you know, Art the Clown has really taken off, and there's Art the Clown, what's Art the Clown merchandise and all sorts. did you envisage, like, the way the character's taken off?
Oh, no. We didn't expect any of this, especially, like, you know, the tattoos and stuff like that. That's been nuts. It's just like, well, this is, we just thought we had a fun character, but we had no idea what we're trying. We made the film for the fans of All Hallows Eve because they loved that. They wanted Art to have his own standalone picture, but we never thought this, because we're trying to be realistic. We were like, we're this low budget, very, very low budget independent film that no one knows about, really, except for those cult horror fans out there. Mm-hmm. And so we were like, yeah, especially since we didn't have a studio behind us, we're like, oh, no one's got to know about us. It's just like, well, if you know, the fans like it, but who knows? I mean, we would love to make more, but that depends, you know, how successful this is. But we're like, well, we'll see what happens. And we did not expect the reaction it got, by far. Because there's been like a sea of horror films that have come out in these past few years. And so we're like, from like the major Hollywood studios, so we're like, we're competing against those guys. So we're like, oh, Wilson, jeez. So to see how we've actually been holding our own against these greats out there is just like, that's amazing. We didn't expect any of that.
I think there is just, you just really hit a kind of a sweet spot that's, you're not really out there. Just like I was saying about the franchise thing and the kind of arty thing of like thinking about like some of the big kind of hit horrors of last year, all of them tended to be that kind of on that more arty side, like the Suspiria remake or Hereditary. Mm-hmm. And things like that. Even Mandy, kind of, you know, it was doing like a weird thing or an arty thing, whereas this is doing something that pays tribute to, yeah, a genre that's kind of not had a lot of love in the last, almost 20 years.
it's just a shame. It's just like, I'm hoping like we're giving this genre a swift kick in the butt that's needed, because I mean, they have released a lot of slashers, but they just haven't been, you know, up to par as to like what was back in the day in the 70s and 80s, especially. It's like there was just something special about those movies. And I think it's because so many of them now are just trying to play it too safe. And this is like the one genre you cannot play it safe in. You have to take risks. You have to have fun with it too.
I get the sense that you're very much embracing taking on that kind of mantle of like becoming like one of those kind of slasher icons. And if you know, like some actors kind of shy away from like the convention scene and all that, mm-hmm. but I see that you're the opposite. You just seem to have very much embraced like I am Art the Clown and, you know, like all that.
Oh, I love it. I love, especially the convention scene. I love doing these conventions because it's like, I look at it as it's a great way for me to like interact with the fans on a more personal level, because it's the fans that made our film what it is. We didn't have publicity for this film by far. It's just like everything that happened is because the fans got out there and they loved the movie, and because they loved the movie so much, they told their friends and they just kept the ball rolling for us. And so it's like, I like being able to go to these conventions because I'm able to actually sit there and talk and interact with the fans face to face. I think that's great. I love it. So much fun. So much fun.
And it does seem to be a film that has very much been built by the fans, because mm-hmm. I saw it was at various horror film festivals in 2017. I didn't manage to see it Fright Fest when it showed there. But by the time it reached like its kind of DVD and Blu-ray premiere over here, like last March or something, like it seemed like a kind of anticipated release. People were like, you've got to see this new Killer Clown movie. It's great. It's got this really cool character in it. And so like, yeah, last year, you know, I tracked it down and watched it. But so it's really, it's a movie that I saw quite a lot on my Twitter feed and stuff like that. So you must be very pleased with just how horror fans have embraced the character and the film.
Oh, very much so. It's just like it's unbelievable. I was like these you know conventions I'm going to, just like just seeing the vendors that are out there that have all this, they were like none of this officially licensed stuff that they're making, but it's like there's so much fan art that they're selling at these conventions. And you don't see that with a lot of, you know, none of these other, like, newer slasher films or these other horror films out there. It's like, it's basically Art the Clown, and then you have all those iconic characters that he's up there with. You know, that's just amazing to me. And I'm seeing people with tattoos, you know, seeing people cosplay. It's just, people will make little gifts for me. Like, I had someone this past weekend that had made a marionette puppet of Art, and they gave it to me, and I was like, this is amazing. It's like, it's just seeing that kind of love for the character already, and this is just his first real big film. Yeah. It's like, you usually don't see that kind of, you know, like that commitment and that love of a character until several films into a franchise. So it's amazing to me, absolutely amazing to me.
Yeah, I mean, like you say, you know, it usually takes a few films before it kind of builds into the kind of legend of this particular slasher icon, but it seems to have been just growing out of this film.
Yeah, it's mind-blowing, absolutely mind-blowing. So I haven't seen any tattoos of Hereditary yet, so you must be doing something right.
are you very much at the moment focused on Terrifier 2, like helping, or did you are you kind of collaborating with Damon at all in terms of like thinking about how to take the character forward? Is it is very much mm-hmm. like he deals with it and then you just get the script? Or
We collaborate a lot now. I think we realized that when we were on set, because I would come up with ideas for like certain scenes on set, and we're like, we would just play around a lot. So we go, oh wow, we really work well together, bouncing ideas off each other. So when he was writing the sequel, we were like bouncing ideas off each other the whole entire time. I still am coming up with ideas that we can add to some of the scenes he's written into the film already. And it's just like, it's great having that kind of relationship with a director, where it's like, you don't usually see that with an actor and director / writer. It's kind of nice having that kind of creative input.
So he didn't like kind of veto anything or say like, I've got creative control here.
Sometimes he knows exactly, like, especially when we've been working on Art's origin together, and like, we might not actually put all that out into the film, but personally, we want to come up with his origin just so both of us know exactly who and what he is. And there have been some things I suggest, it's like, that's a fun idea, but no, this is why. And I'm like, oh, okay, cool. So yeah, and there are other times it's like, yeah, that's a fun idea, but it's not totally true to the character. I'm like, okay, sure, no problem.
Fair enough. Are you planning, have you got any other projects coming up, or are you planning on doing any more horror films outside of Terror?
Well, right now I'm still working on my the web series where I play the Joker called Nightwing Escalation. I think we've been waiting for our Batgirl keeps getting pregnant, so we have to keep postponing filming. I was like, oh no, she's pregnant again. Dang it, can't have a fight scene now. But so yeah, I'm still working on that. But besides that, I'm still auditioning, trying to do some voiceover projects and whatnot. So we'll see what happens. But yeah, I would say my main focus right now is trying to get Terrifier 2 going.
Okay, absolutely. So just because it dropped yesterday, and I know that the Joker is a character close to your heart, and I'm not gonna lie, I saw your tweet yesterday, and this question might be something of a setup, but I apologize.
Oh, this is bad. I'm probably gonna piss people off. Yeah. You're talking about the Joker trailer, right?
Yes, I'm talking about the Joker trailer. To be fair, right? Uh-huh. I read your tweet, and I was kind of like, "Yeah, I can see your point. I can see your point of characters don't really need an origin story." It was like the Rob Zombie Halloween. I was like, "I don't need a backstory for Michael Myers. Yeah. I don't need to know the psychology of Michael Myers. Michael Myers is a supernatural force who kills people. That's all he is."
That's all you need to know. That's all you need to know. It's just like, especially with Joker, this totally pertains to it. It's like, he even like one episode of Batman animated series, like, you never explain the joke. And that's how I feel it should be with, Joker's origin. Never explain the Joker. It's just like, it is what it is. If you don't grasp what it is, that's on you. But this is what he is. And that's the thing with, like, over 75 plus years of this character's history, they have still never given him a definitive origin of who he was before he fell into that vat of chemicals at Ace Chemicals as the Red Hood.
Yeah,
and the world's greatest detective, Bruce Wayne, has never been able to figure out who he is. And it bothered him so much that when he sat on the Mobius chair, that's the one question he asked, is what is the Joker's real name? So if Batman, the world's greatest detective, can't figure out who the Joker is, we shouldn't know who he is either. I think it's better to leave that a mystery. And I know people like to point out the Killing Joke, or, it's the Killing Joke. He had this story in there. I'm like, no. Even the Killing Joke, he points out that he's an unreliable narrator of his own past. Sometimes I remember it one way, sometimes another. If I'm going to have a pass, I might as well make it multiple. I prefer to be multiple choice.
Absolutely. I don't get that as an argument, because like I was going to bring up the Killing Joke because I saw your video on YouTube of the monologue you did from the Killing Joke, and that's the whole punchline of the Killing Joke is like it's clearly he's just saying different things, you know, like you can't rely on what he's told you.
You can't trust what he's saying. So like, I think he's a more intriguing character when you don't know who he is and what drove him crazy, or is he actually crazy, or is this all an act? Is he just extremely intelligent and he's fooling everybody, and that's the big joke, that he is actually incredibly sane? It's like you don't know, and I think that's what makes him more intriguing. And my second gripe with it is that they show Bruce Wayne as not as Batman in this, but as a child. And that's a key dynamic between the Joker and Batman, is Batman creates the Joker. He is responsible for him falling into that vat of chemicals and going insane. He is responsible for that. And that's like one thing that he has always, you know, felt guilt for, is he created one of Gotham's biggest menaces and his greatest adversary. He is directly responsible for that. So that's imperative that you have that there in his origin. If you're going to do an origin story, that has to be there. And it can't be there if Bruce Wayne's a little kid. It's like, was this Arthur Fleck guy going to be going around for like 20 years being some kind of proto-Joker before he's finally the Joker? That would mean everybody would know who he was beforehand. It's just like, to me, it disrespects the character. Mm. I'm like, yeah, and like I said, I have no problems with Joaquin playing it. I think he's going to do a fantastic job with whatever he's doing. He's a fantastic actor.
He is a great actor.
Yeah, I have no problem. I can't wait to see what he brings to the character. But I just wish they were doing a different story with the character. You have so many stories you can do with Joker. And you use a great actor like Joaquin Phoenix. That's the one story you should not be doing, is his origin.
Yeah. I'm on board with that. I agree with that. And I think it's a really interesting casting, and I like you say, Joaquin Phoenix is a great actor. I loved him in all sorts of things.
Oh yes, I love watching him work, and I can't wait to see what he does with. I'm still going to go see the movie.
Yeah,
but I'm just like, if they had the exact same story, but with this just being a completely original character, I'll be so much more on board on.
Well,
it just seems like a cheap cash in to me. I'm like, this is a famous character, so we're going to do this. Just try to put butts and see because it's the Joker. I'm like, ugh.
I can very much see where you're coming from.
It's just, I love the character so much. That's the thing. He's my favorite villain of all time. And I'm just like, I hate to see him. I hate to see Hollywood keep on bastardizing him like this. I've been wanting to see a true, you know, like comic book depiction of the Joker on film for a long time, and I just didn't, like the closest we ever really got with Jack Nicholson, but still that wasn't the Joker of the comic book.
That's true. That was very much.
Yeah, that was still Jack Nicholson.
That was still I was going to say that was still a very Jack Nicholson performance.
It was great, but I want to, you know, the closest real that we've actually really had to a live action Joker, as it was in the comics for the time, was Romero's version.
Yes.
At the time, that's how Joker was in the comic. He was very comedic, very over the top, cartoonish. I want to see, basically, to me, Mark Hamill is the definitive version of the Joker. I think he encapsulated with his voice who the Joker of the comic book is.
I think a lot of Batman fans would agree with you on that.
Mark understands the Joker. He understands. It's because he's had years to develop that character.
Yeah, absolutely. In the way can't have yeah. in like a movie.
And that's how, like, I would love to play the Joker, but I'm like, I don't want to play him on in a film. I would love to play him on a TV series so I could take that time to develop the character as well and just build upon him over time. Oh, it would be so much fun.
Well, I hope you managed to do that. Maybe one day you will take over the Mark Hamill mantle.
Oh, I would absolutely love it. You can put a smile on my face.
your impersonations are great. I also watched that video you did from the New Jersey HorrorCon where you did the Let It WB song.
I
really enjoyed that. I got a real kick out of that.
Oh, I had to do that. I've never done that live before. I've always been so scared about doing that live. But I'm like, it was John Kassir hosting this thing. And I'm like, you know, Crypt Keeper himself. That man is a master at voices. And I'm like, okay, John's hosting. I've got to do something. This is I got to challenge myself. If I, you know, if I'm gonna do it, this is the time to do it. So I was like, okay, I'm doing it. Also, Richard Grieco was singing all night, which is a trip in itself. He was like singing literally all night. That was a crazy night. Oh, that was also the end of the video. You see a woman come up and start singing with me in the. That was Denise Crosby.
Oh, wow.
From Pet Sematary, yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that was a mind trip.
Conventions are funny things, man.
Oh, man, they're great. They are great. That was a trip.
Well, David, it's been really fun to have you on the show. And I look forward to watching more killing sprees of Art the Clown and Terrifier 2 when it comes together.
Oh, I do too. I can't wait to film all this. The things we have cooked up are going to be so much fun. I am so giddy.
Excellent.
Well, thank you so much for having me. This has been so much fun chatting with you.
Yeah, and I'm always happy to have you on again for Terrifier 2, the return of Art the Clown on the New Horror Express podcast.
Oh, definitely so. Love to come back.
We're going to hold David to that as soon as Terrifier 2 comes around. Anyway, I'd like to thank David once again for coming on the show, as well as to you, listener, for tuning in. Also, if you like what you heard on this episode, please do rate, review, and subscribe to us on iTunes and Stitcher. Anyway, that's all for this episode. Until next time, see ya!